Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Welcome back to Your Family Dog. I'm Colleen Pilar, and as always, I'm joined by Julie Fudge-Smith. But today we have a guest, and we're super excited to talk to her. We have Dr. Risa Van Fleet, a psychologist and the president of the International Institute for Animal-Assisted Play Therapy. And we invited Risa to come on today because we got a listener question that we didn't really know how to answer, so we thought we better pull in the expert. The question is, how should you act when something is happening that you're witnessing? So how do you be a good bystander if you see someone being a little bit rough with their dog or verbally unkind or just the situation seems more than you're comfortable with, but it's not your dog and you don't know the human? Easy, right?
Oh, yeah. I think that's a question that's really about 100 questions in one.
Yes, it is.
But maybe I'll kick off with a little bit of a response to it, and then we can kind of take it from there. This is one I've had, obviously, probably like many of us that love dogs or love any kind of animal. We see things happening, and we have experience with it because we see something going on, and you think, oh, that poor animal, and should I say something or not? Should I do something or not? And I think that's probably the crux of this, and what are the benefits or the drawbacks of doing that. I used to, in the past, intervene more than I do now. So I think it's one of those where you have to kind of pick the situation that you think you can actually have an impact in. And it's not so much, to me, it's not so much whether or not you say anything, but it's how you approach the situation. So there might be things I might say, but how I approach it has changed over the years. And, you know, being informed by my background in human psychology and so forth. But there are times where you just have to say, not my business. I can't, you know, intervene. There are other times where I can maybe in a very gentle way bring something up or offer to help or whatever. But the key to any kind of intervention that we ever make with people, especially when they're strangers, is not to create defensiveness. So the bottom line, and that's kind of my guiding principle, is can I intervene somehow in a way that doesn't make that person feel defensive or that they're doing something wrong or bad? Because the minute they feel defensive, we've lost our chance to have any impact at all. So that's probably what is forefront in my mind most of the time, is how can I, if I want to intervene, how can I do that in a way that is kind and gentle enough, even though I might want to say, why the heck are you doing that to your dog? Don't you know that your dog is you know, upset by that? That's not going to fly. None of us wants to be told what to do. And none of us want somebody else, especially a stranger, pointing at us and saying, what you're doing is all wrong. So that's the big hurdle and the big challenge. And I imagine we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go along.
That is a big challenge.
That is a big challenge. So do you find that you tend to say things like, if I want to approach somebody and have them not be defensive, and honestly, I'm not very good at this, but the few times I have been even remotely successful is when I've done something like, wow, dogs can be really frustrating sometimes, can't they? You know, acknowledge the situation so they hear that you see what's going on, say, wow, I would be really frustrated too. I found what, you know, and I know how you feel, and gosh, looks like what you're trying is not working particularly well, or, you know, it's just something, but I think just the acknowledgement of the situation is the way to keep the door open.
Yes, I think that's a superb way of doing it, where you can kind of just reflect how you think they might be feeling, what they're dealing with, because there's a big embarrassment factor. Mm-hmm. Whenever, let's say you're out in public somewhere, and you know, you're at the park, you're in the pet store, or wherever you might be, you're walking down the street, and you know, you've got a dog who's pulling or, you know, barking its little brains out or whatever is going on. And, you know, maybe because you have a different experience with dogs, or you've been through lots of good positive training or those kind of things, then you can see, wow, they shouldn't be doing that. That's, again, it's human nature to want to point to somebody and say, don't be doing that. Don't be pulling the lead so hard, or don't be jerking them around. But that is not going to be what's most helpful. So exactly that, to kind of reflect, wow, that must be really frustrating, or looks like you got your hands full today. Mm-hmm. You can even use a little humor in a situation like that, maybe, as long as they don't feel like you're making fun of them. But something right. that kind of it looks at the human that you might ordinarily, your first reaction is to be angry with, the better thing to do is, what's going on for them right now? If I were in their shoes, how would I be feeling? What does it look like they're feeling? And to just simply say that. That keeps the door open. Anytime we start off with don't be doing that, we've lost them. You may as well not say anything at that particular right, time.
Because I think people take it very personally when their dogs misbehave in public. It's very much this is a reflection. You're doing this to humiliate me or whatever. I mean, they may not be exactly what they're vocalizing, but that's sure as heck what they're feeling like. Excuse me. Is you're doing this simply because you want to embarrass me in public. And really, that's probably the furthest thing from your dog's mind. What this probably boils down to is just a training issue in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
In other cases, it happens to be that the dog is fearful in this situation or doesn't feel safe and is trying clearly to communicate to the owner, I'm really uncomfortable here. I need your help. And they're not being able to read the situation. So I think that, yeah, it's sometimes I'll say, wow, you know, I have a dog that does just that. And boy, that can be really frustrating or embarrassing, can't it? And
if you've had a similar experience, then you can draw on that. Not all of us have had that similar experience, but I think if you do have one or whatever, just so that they feel like they're not all alone. And I think you're absolutely right that we get embarrassed easily. You know, we're supposed to have well-behaved dogs. We're supposed to have well-behaved children. The same thing applies mm-hmm. when our kids are misbehaving in public. And it's like, right, it can be really embarrassing. And when we're embarrassed, we can lash out and maybe do things we never do ordinarily. So I think that's a really good thing to kind of keep in mind, you know, to try to pull on our empathy a little bit and say, yeah, that looks pretty tough. And to think, even though they might be yelling, they might be screaming, they might be yanking on the leash like crazy, that is probably a lot of it coming from that embarrassment and the frustration. I'm supposed to have a perfect dog. This dog is a reflection on me. I totally agree with you. It's not where dogs are just being dogs. It's kind of like, well, look at, there's something interesting over there. I want to go over there.
That's right.
And in this particular case, it's not about the people from the dog's point of view. But from our point of view, we have to kind of think, there's a parallel example in a way that I learned back in grad school from my mentors when I was learning to do therapy. And it was to think that people are the way they are for a reason. We don't always know what that reason is, but whatever they're doing, however they're behaving, they're that way for a reason. So, you know, it doesn't make it an excuse. It doesn't mean that if somebody's really abusing a dog or being rude to us is an excuse for that, but there's a reason behind it. That person's life experiences or whatever are there. So when people are the way they are for a reason, it's sort of like, we don't know what that reason is, so we could step all over it and actually make it a lot worse. You know, maybe they're just acting out what they learned along the way, and they don't have, like you said, Julie, that there's no other skills maybe there. You know, sometimes they just don't have other skills. So the other thing I think we can do when we approach people is, instead of telling them what they should do, first ask them if they'd like a little help. Like, you could maybe say that, you know, it looks like that's really, really tough. You got your hands full there with that dog. And even if they say, yes, this dog is a terrible, miserable dog, don't buy into that. Don't try to argue with that. That's just their frustration. They can say, yeah, they can be pretty frustrating sometimes. I've had a similar experience. And, you know, I learned a few tricks, and I'd be glad to talk with you about what was helpful for me, or I'm glad to try to help you. You know, maybe they're in the store. I'm thinking of a situation that I ran into where the person was in one of the big pet stores, and they had a dog that was out of control. And so I kind of did say something that they looked pretty approachable and that I could make a comment. They seemed to take the comment pretty well. And then I just said, is there anything I can do to help you? You know, I'm glad to hold your dog or, you know, hold the leash or something for a few minutes if you need to get something. And they took me up on it, which is kind of not necessarily that we should all be giving our hands or handing our dogs off to strangers.
Strangers.
And I probably did say something about, well, I train dogs some of the time. Or again, I didn't make a big, you know, I'm a certified dog behavior consultant. I did a very, very low key, you know, just, well, I train dogs some of the time and I'm glad to, you know, hold your dog. I'll stay right here. I mean, or I'll follow you around or whatever. And she actually took me up on it, which was kind of interesting. So sometimes offering to help, but not, I don't think I started off by saying, I'll hold your dog for you. I just said, is there something I can do to help? It looks like you got your hands full. And she said, well, yeah, if you don't mind, I need to get this. And I've done that other times where they'll say, I need to get that down from this upper shelf or I need to go to the bathroom for out in a park. Well, you know, I can stand out here. But again, I you know, it's not good to just hand your dog off to somebody you don't know, but you can offer that help and see what they think would be helpful to them.
One of the things that I found too is I've finally given myself permission that I don't have to intervene every time, because there are some times when it's not comfortable for me. I think about one time when I took my younger daughter hiking in the Hocking Hills here in Ohio, and we were up on this rim trail, and there was a man with a group of 5 or 6 boys, and they were really loud. I mean, they were yelling all the way up and down the trail. So at one point I finally said, hey, you know, maybe you could be a little quieter so we can, you know, I said, you can see nature a little bit better. Maybe we'll see a deer or something, just because it was spoiling our hike. He turned on me and laid into me, called me this presumptuous, you know, female dog, and that these kids were inner city kids and they didn't get out very often. And why don't you just back off, woman, and let them play? And I was like, wow, I got to tell you, I really learned a lesson about being careful on who it is that I choose to interact with, because I really didn't want to go through something like that again. So I just want to say, don't feel as though you have to intervene every time. If you are not feeling in a safe place yourself, don't do it. And it's okay, because you got to take care of yourself and your dog too.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And there are times where, like, for example, I will occasionally see people like thinking about buying a shock collar or buying a prong collar or something like that. Again, these are strangers. If they're clients of mine, I have my own way of dealing with that. But if they're, you know, in the store, I have on occasion, but not anymore, gone up to people and said, you know, those aren't really the best things. I could suggest some other things. And, you know, what they did is they moved away. But I'm not sure I convinced them of anything because they didn't engage me in conversation. But there are people that will get angry like you've described, and we can't always tell who they are. So I think one of the things we can do is if you do choose to say something and the person comes back at you, even like not even super angry, but a little bit miffed, that's the time to back off and just say, they're not ready for it. You know, they're not ready to hear it, or the way I got it started isn't the way that's going to work for them, because we can't save everybody in the world. Similar to your story, Julie, I spend a lot of time in Alaska and I do a lot of photography with wild Alaskan brown bears. They're in the wild. And they're fishing, and there's certain rules about how you behave around bears so you don't get bothered by them. And it was in a national park. I was walking on a trail, and there's a bear sleeping right across the trail. And so one of the rules in the national park is you do not ever disturb a sleeping bear. You know, about sleeping dogs, the same thing goes for bears.
Probably even more so.
Yeah, probably. And there were 4 adults of us stopped because we were just waiting for the bear to wake up or do something so we could go the rest of the trail. And a man and 2 women, and there were 2 little kids, probably 5 or 6 years old. They didn't used to let them go in that that young, but they do now. And he came along, what's the big hold up here? And we just said, well, there's a bear sleeping. Well, we can just go around. I said, and I've been there like many, many times. So I know bear stuff. And I kind of said, you don't really want to do that because they can wake up at any moment and you don't want to wake up a sleeping bear. Well, he did anyway. And I figured I did what I could. I was angry, but I didn't express that to him. I just went right to the park rangers as soon as we got, because as soon as they got past the bear got up and moved. So, you know, then I had to think of what other constructive action can I do, because those kids could have been killed. You know, we all could have been endangered. So I went to the park rangers and I did what I had to. That would be more akin to a case where if you had an actual abusive situation going on, that's a little bit different than I think.
Right, right.
And again, confronting somebody who's abusing an animal is not going to be necessarily the best thing to do either. You can try these same strategies we've been talking about, but what I might be doing is waiting outside the store and getting their license plate number or something like that if I really saw something that bothered me, and then I just contact the authorities, let them handle it because mm-hmm. they have more training in doing it that way. But I think anytime people get irritated with this, it's time to just say, oops, we don't have to prove anything. You know, it's right, not about right. showing them just how right we are. So that tendency for us to argue back and say, well, you know, I am right. think of my bear example. If I'd said, you know, I'm right, we could have all woken up the bear right then with our argument. So, you know, he wasn't going to listen to any of that. And so I just kept my fingers crossed that nothing bad was going to happen.
And right.
Nothing
and,
bad
and of
did,
course,
thereby proving the point to the other guy that he was right. You know, it's like, yeah. See, nothing bad
yeah,
happened.
Yeah.
You can pass sleeping bears.
Right.
That crazy lady who said
yeah.
we shouldn't.
Yeah.
Right. So, oh, so you're glad that nothing happened, but he now has been reinforced incorrectly.
Yes.
You know, and yes. we a bad behavior has been reinforced strongly.
Yeah.
And so he's
yeah.
going to continue. And what kind of example is he setting for his kids? And I mean, it just goes on and on. So bravo for you for going to the park rangers.
I think that just raised another thing that I think can be helpful for people in this situation. If you find yourself thinking they should not be doing whatever they're doing, there's a lesson we can take from the way we, most of us probably do dog training, which is when we tell our dogs not to do something, it doesn't really help matters much. When we tell a 2-year-old not to do something, it doesn't tell them what they should be doing. So the best kind of feedback we can give people is to make a suggestion about what they can be doing instead. So the examples we just talked about, they're not going to be open to that, but there are going to be other times if we're going to phrase a suggestion to somebody else, it's better to say, maybe if you tried this, it would work mm-hmm. a little bit better. You know, we're not going to train them on the spot. We're not going to completely change their behavior. But if they're listening to us and we've engaged them in a friendly way, to be able to say, maybe you could do this instead. And that takes some training in our own brains, in our own minds, to do that. Because there's a tendency, again, I think a lot of it's the way we're socialized and the way we're raised sometimes is it's very easy to point out a problem. You
yeah.
shouldn't be doing
yeah.
that. Instead of, you should, maybe here's something else. I stay away from the words like should also because that
right.
carries a load with it. But just to say, well, maybe if you tried this, it would work a little bit better.
Right. The other thing, when you were saying that, it reminded me of a client I had a few days ago who he's trying real hard. He's doing as good a job as he can at training his dog. He's got teenagers in his house, though, and they get quickly frustrated with this puppy. And he said, is there any time where, you know, like, saying no or yelling at the dog or that's an appropriate training? And I was like, okay, great, educational moment, you know? So what I said to him was, I said, well, not really. I said, the problem with using punishment is that punishment, yes, will stop a given behavior if it's done correctly. But it does nothing to train the dog about what he should be doing instead.
Yeah.
And your daughter, who gets frustrated when she asks the dog, the puppy, it's only just a little puppy, asks the puppy to come and the puppy doesn't, of course, she takes it personally. And then she gets mad and she mm-hmm. uses a stronger voice. And I'm like, I think what she's going to find is that that's not working. The dog's not coming to her any faster. And so it really gave us the opportunity to talk about what punishment is and why it may not be the training method that you want to go down, because you're not actually training the dog to do what you want it to do. So I thought to myself, what a great, I don't often get the opportunity to really have a good discussion, because I'm always emphasizing the positive end of things and that we're going to ignore, redirect, or prevent bad behaviors, and we're going to really heavily reinforce our good behaviors. And so it was in some ways quite rewarding to be able to have that discussion so that he truly understood that that wasn't the avenue he wanted to go down. Mm-hmm. And he didn't want to lead his kids down that avenue either. And what can he do to help his daughter instead? So then we practice all different ways to play calm. So, yeah.
And that's an important piece. I'm sorry to interrupt. That's an important piece too, that we, again, with people we don't know, we're probably not going to start practicing a bunch of skills with them, but with people we do know, or maybe even family members, you know, we go to visit somebody for a holiday and we see something going on in the household that you think, oh, that poor dog, why are they doing that to their dog? Because we have learned a different way. But again, even the showing of what to do can be really, really helpful. So one of the things I try to do, my dogs are not perfect by any means, and I'm glad they're not perfect. They're well-behaved when they need to be. They all have a rocket recall. I mean, we live out in the country, and there's some new dogs at the farm next door that are very fascinating, but I can still call them right back to me. So, you know, there's some things I've really spent time with them learning, but I like my dogs to be who they are. And sometimes I think as trainers, we can go, you know, a little bit too far getting those perfect dogs, but hopefully, you know, most of us don't. But the idea of just showing. So I like, if I'm going to be out in public or doing workshops or whatever I might do with my dogs present, I like to be modeling all the time. So I can show people, look, you can get a dog like this. And my dogs are not all easy dogs, but it's a matter of helping people see that, you know, because they might look at your dog and say, well, you know, you've got an easy dog. Your dog's smart and follows what you do. Well, let me tell you a few stories about my dog. And so you can chit chat with people. Not that it should be all about you and your own dogs, but I think it's a matter of, again, finding that relatable piece and then finding a way to kind of connect with them and say, well, I don't mind giving you a few tips if you want them. Sometimes I'll put that out there too. So I don't just give them tips. I'll just say, maybe there's a few things, or you can just show them the alternative way. I had an occasion to meet an older woman who's had dogs her whole life. She thought she knew dogs really well. And she got a dog who's a problem dog. The dog's really fearful. And when I met her, she was doing too much hands-on. You know, she was trying to make sure the dog was behaving in certain ways. And I think it was kind of making the situation worse. So I did not have a big conversation with, well, that's not really the best way to do it. But I'd say I did try to educate her a little bit that I thought her dog looked a little bit fearful. But I said, let me show you a secret. And I did it kind of conspiratorially and friendly. You know, it was a friendly kind of thing. I want to show you a secret. And I happened to have some chicken with me. So I could kind of, there was a piece of grass and we just spread the chicken around the grass and got the dog to use its nose. And she would just follow it along and start pointing out where the chicken was. It's something I've learned from a couple different dog trainers along the way in my own education. And the dog all of a sudden was connecting with her. And that was a big problem before. The dog was too fearful to connect. So instead I got her to stop the intrusive behaviors simply by giving, that's kind of an example of, here's something else you can do. I showed her how to do it. Her dog was scared of me, so I couldn't actually do it with her dog, but I showed her how to do it physically. I kind of pretended the dog was with me and then had her do it. And then she was like delighted. So, you know, sometimes people really do want that help. And it can be very simple, but showing them, you know, what to do can be part of it too. I'm, you know, a dog, I do behavior work with dogs and I train dogs some of the time. So, you know, I might have more of those tricks up my sleeve a little bit. But at the same time, if you've been through some really good positive dog training classes, you know, we could spend a lot of time saying, here's all these bad sides of punishment. But the other thing I try to keep in mind whenever I'm working with any people, whether they're strangers or not, is that most people get animals not because they want to control them, not because they want to dominate them, not because they want to control every move they make. They get animals because they want to have a good companion. And so then if the animal is misbehaving, whether it's a little puppy or not, we know that a little puppy doesn't has to be taught how to behave, but they might not know that. You know, when they got that puppy, they thought the puppy would just be joy, 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 and that would be all there would be to it. So I try to appeal to that. You know, it looks like, you know, you're really trying hard to have a good relationship with your dog. Here's something I've tried at home that is really helpful. And if you haven't ever gone to a positive dog training class, here's somebody that I know I can refer you to. You know, there might be little things like that you can just put into a conversation. But but I think sometimes we judge other people that we see. And we forget that at one time in our lives, maybe we were making some of those same mistakes. I know that was true of me. Colleen actually played a big role. And I was well on my way to being positive, but not far enough. And Colleen, very nicely, I asked her to read a manuscript I'd written. And she gave me some very nice feedback that opened my eyes the rest of the way. So I'm eternally grateful for that. And that was really a very nice way. I mean, you weren't preachy about it. You just said, think about this a little bit, and maybe other people don't see it quite the same way. It was very just put out there, floated the idea. I like floating ideas. And I was ready to hear it, whereas, you know, maybe I wouldn't have been before that sometime.
Colleen is very good at that. She, if anybody has to float an idea in our duo, I always want Colleen to do it because people will.
She's a good floater.
She is. She's a much better floater than I am. I'm sort of the, let me hit you over the head with this. You know, I happen to have this handy dandy mallet over here. I'm going to really whomp you upside the head. And Colleen, let's float the idea, Julie. And Colleen wins every time. She is just brilliant. You really are brilliant at that, Colleen. And you have a great way of making, of correcting people without them feel like they're being corrected. Yeah. Which is a skill so far beyond anything in my toolbox. It's just amazing.
Well, I have a question for Risa.
Us... Okay, go
Let's
ahead.
Get back on target. Not about me anymore. I can't handle it. So the other day I was at just a strip mall, and there was a woman working with her dog, and there's no one else around. So it's just this woman and her dog and me, and we're walking down a sidewalk in front of some stores, and she's using a shock collar on her dog, and she comes up to the corner and she's making her dog sit, and I can see the remote in her hand, and this dog's body language was morose. If I'm going to use a word, morose is the word. The dog made direct eye contact with me with the most pleading look, and I cannot shake the image. So I didn't say anything to her because she was trying to be training her dog and she wasn't asking for my advice. And but wow, that dog. I mean, honestly, if she hadn't made such close eye contact with me, I might have been able to just be like, well, that was just a bad moment in one dog's very happy life. But I felt a real connection to this dog, and she's popped up in my head a few times. So what do we say when we said, okay, in this moment, I've chosen not to intervene. What are your suggestions for people for moving forward from that?
Well, that's the battle we have in our heads of I should have said something versus it wasn't really practical to do that. And, you know, there's many times, and I think, again, when we have a passion for animals and we love them, and like you said, you can see that they're in agony, but whatever the situation, that we don't feel comfortable making a comment, or making a comment is going to be counterproductive. You know, it might just drive her into the arms of shock training even more if they get defensive. I think then it's a matter of, again, telling ourselves a little bit about, I can't change the world. You know, what is within my control to do? Well, one of the things that I do, because I like to write, is if I see an example like that, I will think about, what would I, if I could have talked with her, if we were friends or we'd gotten to know each other or something, what would I want her to know? And then I write articles, little things here and there. And I also incorporate it in my training because I train therapists to involve their animals in their work. And I want them to be very attuned to their animals. But it's just a matter of how do I turn that into some positive and educate maybe people more. So I'm pretty active on Facebook. I have a bunch of groups. And the reason for that is I want to educate people. So there are many times I will bring up, or I'll bring up a topic, or I'll put some ideas out there, strictly because either I've had an experience outside in the real world, or I've seen somebody with some misperceptions on, you know, Facebook or whatever that need to be corrected. Now, in my own groups, I'll find face-saving ways to try to say, well, I understand your intentions were good, but maybe this is another way you could approach that, because I've got a, it's not just that one person I don't want to offend, but you have a lot of other people listening. But I think it's a matter of how do we try to think in our heads, what can I do? What constructive action could I take? Might not be with that woman and that dog. We might not be able to save them. Although you never know, maybe you'll bump into her again sometime and have a different opportunity. You don't know that. But it's a matter of then how do I get the word out there? Because that dog represents thousands of other dogs and thousands of other owners. So how can we take some kind of constructive action?
That's a good way of thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, that helps me. That's always whenever I can take action on something that I couldn't take, you know, I feel helpless. Then I want to feel like helpful. Yeah. And then the other part is just, and this is, I think, the harder part, but it's just realizing we can't save them all. And again, if I make her angry or something, I might just push her further into what she's doing. That's, we hear more people talking about cognitive dissonance nowadays. That's probably where we could actually create confusion. And if she knows more about the shock training than who the heck am I? So that could actually strengthen her belief in that rather than pull her away. So I think that's there. The other thing I was going to kind of mention that I think is really helpful is instead of focusing on the technique or the equipment sometimes, and your example reminded me of this, Colleen, I like to help people learn about body language. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of good resources out there. Right. Some of them are very involved. Some of them are less so. But if there's a way you can point the person, even they don't even know why, you know, you've got it in your mind, oh, I just saw something I didn't like. And say, hey, oh, you look like you're a dog lover too. Might not look like a dog lover if they're shocking their dog, but they probably are. Yeah. And I've got dogs too. And you'd start up a conversation. I just ran across this great resource on understanding more about dogs' body language so we can communicate with them better. And then I'll just share what those resources might be. It might be a very simple thing. It might be, you know, there's a number of CDs and other things out there that are great. But the more I think people can understand the body language in their dogs and really start to understand what their dogs right. are saying right. to them, they're going to be much more open to other things. Like even in my workshops, I sometimes show how when you lean over a dog forward, you know, straight on, I, with all my dogs, will do it. And it's pretty predictable. So I do the demonstrations with my own dogs. We have good relationships where if you lean over them just a tiny bit, you know, not even like bending completely at the waist, but just a little bit, you can watch the base of their ears and their ears. You'll see it. The ears drop down and sometimes they drop back. It depends on the dog. They all have different kind of ears. So I'll just say, okay, watch what you see. Most people, the first time they watch it, they don't see anything else. I can now watch the base of the ears. And then I just show them. And I said, What do you suppose that dog is feeling with all of that? And then they start looking at it from a different point of view of doesn't like it too much, feels a little bit threatened, is maybe thinking you're going to hit it or something. I've never hit my dogs, but they're all rescues, so I don't know what their past histories are. But that the body language, I think, is really a key. Yeah. To helping, like, especially family. If you're with family, give them a Christmas gift and say, this is the coolest, you know, like I like Carol Burns's, what is my dog mm-hmm. saying? There's yeah. a, what is my cat saying? You know, those, I mean, there's several that are really, really good. But something simple that you can give them to kind of take a peek at and maybe, or books, those kind of things, you know, just to try to educate.
I was thinking when you were talking about that, Colleen, is there an episode we've had we haven't talked about body language in dogs?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's every single time. But it pretty is much something time. That people aren't taught that much.
Right.
It's,
no,
it's not a kindergarten lesson where we're like, and today we're going to talk about how dogs tell you when they're happy. Unless, of course, a dog trainer comes into your classroom to do it. But that's pretty rare. It's not a standard piece of a curriculum. So, yeah, body language is vital.
We talk about that a lot. In fact, I was with a client this morning. That's one of the things I did. I said, today we're talking body language. You know, we're going to put her in her crate and you and I are going to sit down and talk body language. One of the things I was thinking, just going back to Colleen with the woman with the shock collar, I would have had a sort of an internal panic moment and what do I do? What do I say? How do I help this dog? But it's certain, but being outside of it, I thought of something that might work in a situation is the dog looks at you and you can say, oh, what a sweet dog. It's a way to open the conversation and then say, hey, can you tell me about this electronic collar? Because I don't know much about them or something. Lead, you know, and then what are you trying to accomplish with this? Because I've never tried that. I've always tried to accomplish it doing this instead. So what I was wondering, and in those situations, if you sort of break the pattern by sort of, you know, trying to connect, say, oh, what a sweet dog or something, an opening, that might be an opening for a conversation.
It might be an opening. I think that, yes, you can try to start just a regular conversation. The only part I might not go for of what you said, because I like the overall idea. I probably wouldn't say I didn't know anything about them. I just wouldn't say anything about them at all. Because the reason for that is, let's say you strike up a relationship, then they find out you're a dog trainer and that you do know something about them, that could destroy some trust. But at the same time, I mean, your general view of what you're trying to do there is really good, which is, how do I connect with this person over the dog and they're caring about the dog? And you can still say, oh, you know, I see you're doing it this way, but I've learned it this other way. So you don't have to actually say you don't know anything about it, because then they're going to educate you about it. And probably don't want to get into that conversation.
That's a really good painful point. I appreciate that. It was just sort of off the top of my head. I was thinking the only way to get into this would be through a conversation. And I thought,
I agree with that. That's
good
part,
advice.
That's the important part.
Yeah.
No, but I like what you had to say about that. That's a great idea. That's a great idea. So
obviously we picked the right person to come on the show and talk to us about how to be a good bystander.
Absolutely.
So thank you, Risa.
The bottom
really
line is, it's not easy. And it is okay if you decide not to intervene. You have to pick your battles sometimes. And hopefully it's not a battle. It shouldn't be a battle. So you have to pick your friendly conversations sometimes.
All right. So can you tell our listeners how they could find out more about you?
I have a couple of websites I will mention. I have several websites. So you can go to it's just my name. It's RISEVANFLEET.com. And then it brings up my different websites. So there's different focus of different, I like to do a lot of different things. So I have a play therapy website that's about people. And then I have a couple other ones relating to dogs. I have the International Institute for Animal Assisted Play Therapy. That website is IIAAPT.org. And that has a resource section. So we have newsletters about building relationships with dogs. And we have we just started a newsletter, so we're just in our third edition, but they're mostly kind of geared toward therapists, but there are a lot of what's in them would appeal to just about anybody that likes dogs. And I have sort of, it's not really an official blog, but there's some little articles and things there that might be of interest to people. And then I am on Facebook. I have a number of groups, but I just go by Risa Van Fleet on Facebook. I have a professional page that has my PhD after my name, but I'm very happy to have people join. I have one group that might be really interesting, which is called Building Strong Relationships with Our Animal. Is that what it is? I'm there. I'm just there this morning. Building Strong Relationships with Animal Companions is the name of the group. It's a closed group. You have to ask to join. But it's not just dogs, but we talk a lot in that group about different things we can do to enrich dog-human relationships and things like that. So that might be of interest to some of your listeners at some point.
Well, that's wonderful.
Also, too, I just wanted to say, Risa, your book, the other half of
Human Half.
Human Half, it's a wonderful book. Wonderful book.
Thank
you. Made all the difference in the way in which I train. So it's
that's why you're using the mallets now.
Yeah, that's right. I used to use sledgehammers.
Sledgehammer, that's what you said.
So, I'm improving.
Yeah, well, that's improvement. You can actually get a blow up hammer now. So yeah, that was the next step.
Maybe Nerf guns, who knows?
No,
it's a great book. And I found it to be valuable, not just in dog training, but just in dealing with people. So, I think most people hope it would take a little more, but it was very good. It was very, very good. So,
thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking. It's really a great conversation here, and I hope that it will be useful for our listeners, and certainly a topic that anybody who loves a dog will run into at some point.
Yes.
So.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here, and I think it's great that you guys do this podcast and kind of help educate. You know, we all need to educate. Once we think we know it all, we're in trouble. So it's great to always be learning, and it's great that you're providing this nice avenue for people to do that. It's been my pleasure to be here.
All right, great. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.